I mean, I actually last week I almost spoke about Tazria, and that was close enough. Like a right. And I told you the chances of me talking about Mitzora were nil. Right. So today's topic, it's not going to be clear from anything over here. So let's start by the beginning. First of all, today's shiur is sponsored by Shuli Haston. Shuli, we're going to have to bother her to start coming back to the shiur again. Shuli used to come every week. Shuli was a student of mine in Bar Ilan, I don't know how many years ago, and her husband also. They met there on the program. Her husband is Josh Haston. So it's for the Refuah Shlema for her father, the Refuat Chaim Yisachar ben Esther Malka, and also Joshua Menaster, in memory of his father, his Yerzeit for his father, Pinchas Eliyahu ben Yaakov Yosef. So it should be Refuah Shlema and Lahavdil. It should be Le'iloi Nishmato. And let's learn. The title or the topic, which is not written for you, is Rabbi Akiva's Seder. Okay, that's one of the famous episodes from the Haggadah. We'll get there. You'll have to give me a little bit of time till we get there, but that's where we're headed. But first I want to start with something which I so apologize for this word, but is more authentic. So here's a little secret. The story of Rabbi Akiva, which is in the Haggadah, right, the story of the rabbis who went and had the Seder in Bnei Brak, there's no source for that. Now, having no source for that is not the biggest issue, because we know not every single book that existed in antiquity made it down to modern times. But my point is, it's not in the Mishnah, it's not in the Gemara, it's not in the Bavli, it's not in the Yerushalmi, it's not in the Tosefta, it's not in the Medrash Halacha, it's not in the Medrash Haggadah, which means we do not have the source for that. The only source that exists for that is the Haggadah of Pesach. Which that itself is interesting. Now, there is a different source. Now, I said the other source is more authentic. It's more authentic for two reasons. One is just based upon the last couple of words that I said, it's actually in the rabbinic sources. It's here staring at us in the Tosefta, but there's a second issue. First, I'll read it, and then I'll explain it. Ein maftir nachar Pesach afi koman. Now, that's a line that some of you should recognize. This is Perek Yud, towards the end of the Masechta. Kigon egozim tmarim uklayot. So let's pause there for a second. So we know that this is what we say to the wise son, and that, by the way, is in the Medrash Halacha, and that is, as an answer to the wise son, is in the Medrash Halacha, in the Mechilta. And this line itself is also paralleled in the Mishnah. So what actually does it mean? The Pesach in this context is the Korban Pesach. And that's also something which is really interesting, that along the way we kind of lost the language. On a Torah level, and we've said this many times, on a Torah level, the word Pesach only refers to the actual bringing of the offering and the day or the time that that offering is brought. The seven-day holiday is always referred to as Chag HaMatzot, and there are two separate interconnected holidays. One of them is Pesach, and one of them is Chag HaMatzot, and part of the complexity of the interrelationship is something that we're going to speak about. But over here, when we're answering the wise son, or just over here as a general rule, what's the rule? Ein maftir nachar Pesach. Once you eat the Korban Pesach, then you should not eat anything else. And afikoman, what does afikoman mean? Most likely it means dessert. So now it's funny, because now we turn the afikoman into the matzah, which replaces the Korban Pesach, and then we think the afikoman is something which you do eat. Well, the thing it says about the afikoman is you can't eat an afikoman, which means the taste of the Korban Pesach should be lingering in your mouth, the taste of redemption, the taste of geula. And it gives examples. Kagon egozim, tamarim, okay, period. Chayev adam lasok behilchot haPesach kol alayla. A person is obligated to be involved in the study of the laws of Pesach all night. Now, there's a couple of things that we need to pay attention to. One is, again, getting way ahead of ourselves, there is an argument as to until which point can you eat the Korban Pesach. The opinion of Rabbi Akiva is until the morning. the opinion of Elazar ben Azariah is only until midnight. The halacha, presumably, is like Rabbi Akiva. And over here, we're just told anonymously that a person is obligated to be involved in the study of the laws of Pesach. Now, when I told you that there are two things about this, you know, one more authentic than the other teaching, during the time that the Beit HaMikdash stood, the central star of the night was the Korban Pesach. The celebration all revolved around the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach was time-consuming. The Korban Pesach was religiously significant, and everything that we did surrounded that. So it's interesting over here that so far everything here as well is about the Korban Pesach. After you eat the Korban Pesach, you don't eat anything else. Even after you eat the Korban Pesach, you still should be involved in studying the rules of the Pesach all night. Eventually, at some point, we're not going to have the Korban Pesach anymore. And once we don't have the Korban Pesach, that itself could be completely traumatic religiously. How do we continue on? What do we do? And it's at that point that we find a shift in focus. And the shift in focus is from this Pesach-centric experience to something took its place. And what took its place is something which was always there. Because I don't want to misstate this, mislead, but it's a question of focus and also quality. Maybe some quantity as well, and that is Tzipo Yetziat Mitzrayim. Tzipo Yetziat Mitzrayim, telling the story, was always there. But it's as we had more to do, we had less to talk, and as we have less to do, then we have more to talk about and more time to talk, and the talking becomes the centrality as opposed to the doing. So that itself, that shift, is something which for us, on the one hand, it's obvious, but on the other hand, maybe we don't realize how important it is. So that's why I said this day, this teaching over here, starting with after the Korban Pesach, right? The Pesach is central. And afterwards, you're chayiv la'asok behilchot ha-Pesach. And then it goes on and it explains. Chayiv adon la'asok behilchot ha-Pesach kol laila. Afilu beino levein beno. Afilu beino levein atzmo. Afilu beino levein talmido. That we need to discuss the laws of Pesach. And again, your mind can very easily misread that or read something else into it because it's more familiar to us to say, oh, what you need to do is be involved in Tzipri Tzim and trying, but that's not what it says. Masa b'Rabban Gamliel u'zakenim shayu mesubin b'beit baitus ben zunin b'lud v'hayu asukin b'hilchot ha-Pesach kol ha-layla ad kro together. And they were there all night until the rooster was crowing. Higbiyum lefneim v'nodu v'alchu lehen l'beit ha-Midrash. And then it ends up over here. Then they go to the Beit Midrash and start the morning prayers. And you realize that's very similar to the story that we know about Rabbi Akiva in Bnei Brak. This is Rabban Gamliel in Lud. But over here, they're being Osek in Hilchot HaPesach. And then it ends up with Ezuhi Birkat HaPesach. What bracha do you say on the Pesach? Baruch Atah Hashem HaKadosh Asher Kedishanu Mitzvah V'Tzivanu Le'achol HaPesach. So you do realize everything about this section focuses on the Korban Pesach, and that is really what we need to pay attention to. Look at source number two, because you're familiar with this, except for one small little part. Tanu Rabbanon, Chacham Sho'alo, Vim Eino Chacham Ishto Sho'alto, which means if your son knows it, ask, your son asks. If not, then your wife asks. By the way, what? What's asked? The imlav hu shol la'atzmo, v'yafilu shnei tamidei chachamim sheyodin behilchot ha-Pesach. Notice, know about the laws of Pesach, sholim zed zeh. And what are they asked? Manishtan alay lezeh mikol leilot. So this itself is really interesting because it's again something which I think we completely don't necessarily pay attention to. But the central part of the Haggadah that we have today is the questions, and then we go about telling the answers. But what actually are these questions, or how are these questions framed? So that was a little subtle just now. But when talking about the Manishtana, it just now called the Manishtana an example of asking about Hilchot HaPesach. If you look at source number 3, again, this is the Mishnah. Uva Mikdash Hayumavim Lefanav Gufel Shel Pesach. They bring in the actual Korban Pesach. Next Mishnah, Mazgulo Kosheni, you pour the second cup, Vikana Ben Sholav, and now the son asks, which, by the way, is exactly where our source before picked up from. Vim Ein Dat Baben of Vimlamdo. And if the son doesn't know how to ask, the father teaches him. By the way, that is not about narrative, that is about law. Maror, that is about law. That's a question that kind of got discontinued. That's a question about the Korban Pesach. So these are all questions which are not questioning or discussing necessarily the narrative of what took place. These are all focused around the law. So I'm saying, when I was pointing out, and I called it, and I don't know if you liked it or didn't, I said, oh no, the Tosefta is quite authentic. Because look how authentically it meshes in together with really what the Manishtana is. I'm not concerned now the answers to Manishtana, but look the way that it connects to the Manishtana. And it continues, which is all slightly different. By the way, at that point, you can say, oh, that has more to do with narrative. And this Mishnah seems to be saying, okay, the kid is asking regarding the halachot, and we go and we weave in the story as we try to explain the halacha. By the way, it's really easy to do. Why are we eating only tzli? Because we're eating meat that was roasted very quickly. Why are we eating meat that was roasted very quickly? Because that night we roasted the meat really quickly because we were preparing to leave Egypt. And not only that, we took the blood and put it on the doorposts. And again, so on and so forth. But we weave the halacha into the narrative as well. And that's why I'm saying I really can't disconnect them. Which then tells us the central place that we should be discussing. Rabbi Gamliel, who we may or may not have just seen, the problem with Rabbi Gamliel, as always, is there's more than one Rabbi Gamliel. So which Rabbi Gamliel is this? Is this the one that was during the time of the Beit HaMikdash, or the one which is post-Beit HaMikdash? Presumably the one who's in Lud is post-Beit HaMikdash. Yeah. Because he's in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, what's he doing in Lud? He should be over there. By the way, that is not necessarily an impossible question, but it certainly would create much more intrigue. Rabbi Gamliel Ya'omer, Kol Shelo Amar Shlosha Dvarim Eilu B'Pesach, which Eilu, so you're going to think, only look forward. Lo Yotze Dechovato, and of course now we wonder, which obligation have you not fulfilled? Ve'eloin Pesach Matzamar. But just notice that those three things reflect three of those questions that we just mentioned in the Manishtana. So the Manishtana, if the kid doesn't know how to ask, teach them the Manishtana, teach them about the Halachot, teach them about the Pesach, teach them the Matzah, teach them about the Mar. But if you don't, meaning, which obligation is he talking about? Apparently, he's talking about the obligation of Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. So according to him, Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim cannot be done unless you discuss these three things, and these three things are Halachot. Which means I'm going to say again, there is this really interesting interplay between the story, the narrative, if you will, and the laws. And during the time that the Beit HaMikdash existed, the main thing was the Korban Pesach, but we had to tell a story with it. But the story that was told revolved around the halachot. And at some point, when we don't have this, then a new story, a new narrative origin will somehow be presented. But let's just continue a drop more. Pesach al Shum Shel Pesach. Hamakom abotei avoteinu b'Mitzrayim, matzal shum shenagalon avoteinu b'Mitzrayim, mor shum shemur hamitrim et chayei avoteinu b'Mitzrayim. Is that enough? We'll read a drop more. B'chol dor v'dor chayei vadim l'radatz v'ki ilu hoyu on Mitzrayim. Who yatzam Mitzrayim? We need therefore to see ourselves as if we left Egypt. Shenemar v'higadat elavincha, which is the main point. This is where we get the narrative from. V'higadat elavincha, tell your kids. B'yomahu lemor ba'avor zeh. What's the avor? What's the zeh? That's very interesting, by the way. What is the zeh? Bavor zeh, asashem li b'tzeif Mitzrayim. The zeh over here, I don't know how literal to be in terms of the Chumash. What is taking place in chapter 13? Because that's actually pretty surprising. Are we talking about matzah at this point? Are we talking about are we talking over here already about Pidyon Bechor? I mean, you have to take a look a little bit at chapter 13 and realize that this is maybe a little more interesting than you realize. But I'm going to say it again. Is Vigadat Levincha is Bavor Zeh? You know, Zeh could very well be pointing at something. You're pointing at the Matzah, you're pointing at the Mar, you're pointing at the Korban Pesach, Bavor Zeh. Which means, I'm going to say it again, that Pesach night is this wonderful combination and merging of Halacha and Agadah, merging between performance and between narrative, there was a time that the performance was so dominant that the narrative had to take a back seat to it. But even there, it was told, as you see Rabbi Gamliel's point, it had to be told within the laws needed to be explained, the performance needed to be explained. And therefore, this passage is probably more connected to what we just now saw in the Tosefta, that Rabbi Gamliel was having his Pesach Seder, and again, what does it say in that Tosefta? So that should not be a surprise. Now you realize that that's exactly what Rabbi Gamliel is telling us. You need to be involved in Hilchot Pesach. There is an interesting Ramban, which is somewhat obscure. It's in source number 4. It's obscure because it's the Ramban in the back of the Gemara. Well, it used to be in the back of the Gemaras. People don't use those Gemaras anymore. In the back of the Gemaras, you have the pages of the Rif. In the pages of the Rif, you have the Balam Or, and then you have what's called the Milchamot. Milchamot is written by the Ramban, who over here is touching a side point. The side point is about the Rif at Kod of the Gemara regarding the davening vatikin and how important it is to daven right with the break of day. That people will say Shema at the precise time. As I previously explained. But Odmishim Tfila Kivatikin, Avalachzor Vilakrot Ein Lanu. And there, but you don't have to repeat it. I mean, that's the best time to do it. But if you didn't do it then, so you missed the best time, you missed the best way. And he writes, Ki yotzei ba, we have a similar halachic phenomena. Kol shelo amar, shelo shedvar me'elu b'pesach, lo yotzei yidei chovato. He didn't fulfill his obligation. V'lo sheyetzarech lagzor v'le'echol pesach matzomar. It's not that you have to go and eat it again. It's very interesting. The Ramban understands Rabbi Gamliel as saying, not that you didn't do the mitzvah of Sipur, you didn't do the mitzvah of Achila. That the mitzvah of Achila, the performance, requires at least a little bit of narrative. And if you didn't, you still did the mitzvah. You still ate the Korban Pesach. You still ate the matzah. You still ate the mar. Again, we would divide this and say it a little differently, but again, it depends on Rabbi Gamliel. We today would have said, yeah, you did the mitzvah of Achila, but you didn't do the mitzvah of Sipur. I'm just pointing out that it's possible that the mitzvah of Sipur and Achila were much more tightly connected than we ever realized, especially when you see all the earlier sources, all the Mishnaic sources, that's what it really is. All the sources of the time of the Mishnah are focusing on halachot, 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 and then when the performance of the halachot, ba'avor zeh, yigarata, is ba'avor zeh, you have to explain what you're doing. And yes, we know that there's another mitzvah which seems today to be the main mitzvah, and that is L'saper, but now look at the difference between the sources. If you're not clear how to look at those differences, now look at source number 5, which is, before we began, we were much more familiar with this. It says, Afilu kolanu chachamu kolanu nevonu kolanu zakenu kolanu yodim et haTorah mitzvah leinu L'saper b'yitziyat Mitzrayim. Now again, you can just go back and take a look again at source number 1, at what it actually said, or look at the Gemara it quoted in source number 2, and what it says there, it's Behilchot HaPesach, but over here in our Haggadah, it shifts it. In a certain sense, it updates it. It's far more relevant to us today to focus on Sipur and not to focus on the Korban Pesach. We don't have the Korban Pesach. But now you realize this is, I kept using the word authentic before, but for our Pesach experience, this is much more authentic because this is what we need and this is what we do. V'kol harmar b'lasapi v'tzim mitzrayim harezi mishubach. Again, halacha is gone. Sipur has now taken its place. Masabir Lazabir Yeshua Birlazaban Azari of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, show you Misubim Bibnei Brak. Again, before it was, we saw that they were Misubim in Lud, and now you have this group of people, and Rabbi Gamliel is not here, are Misubim in Bnei Brak. Vahoyu Masaprim Yisim Mitzrayim Koloto Alayla. And they were doing the mitzvah of Sipur. They were talking about Yisim Mitzrayim that entire night. Ad Shabol Tamideyim, until the students came, V'amulam Rabotenu, he gives man kriyat shma shel shachrit. Then we have the continuation, which maybe was spoken about then, and where Elizabeth Azariah, Rei Nika ben Shivim Shana, V'lo Zachiti, Shatom Yitzim Tzvayim B'leilot. And this is not a Pesach problem. This is an all-year problem, in terms of what is the mitzvah of saying Shema at night. And he says, whether you say the third chapter of Shema, the third chapter of Shema you say in the morning, because it's do it tzitzit. But what about at night? At night, so is there leaving? Do we talk about this at night? Again, every day of the year, not just Pesach. So there is this obligation every night. So So, by the way, this is not to say that Elazar ben Azariah didn't do it. He's just, what is he saying? And those who should te amer could be that other people will say it because I couldn't convince others that this was correct. Shete amer. So I'm saying the language is interesting, and I'm not going to get that far into what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is saying, but I do want to go back and consider a couple of things regarding, again, this central passage. So where do we begin? First of all, we notice, as I've already said a couple of times, we notice where it's somewhat updated. What were they all doing in Bnei Brak? And there's lots of questions. And by the way, lots of people asked lots of questions. My only disappointment is that each time, I've looked at a bunch of sources on this week, and everybody who asked these questions kind of make believe that no one ever asked the questions before that it occurred to them. I mean, there are people writing today thinking that, you know, they've discovered America on this. So it's interesting. Let me just say one more thing about that. There is this common theme where people will say, oh, there's a secret behind here. By the way, you can just Google Rabbi Akiva, secret sage. There are lots of people like to call it like that. But again, I'm not for a second to it, because I mean, the first thing you can ask, and the most obvious, is where is Rabbi Akiva's family? Where is Rabbi Akiva's wife? Where are his children? By the way, simple answer is they were there. What about his students? So the students are there knocking by the doors. Okay, that's interesting. What about these other rabbis? So some, again, people say, why aren't they with their families? Why aren't they? Maybe their families are there. I don't know what to say, but there is this approach where people claim, no, is that this was a secret meeting and they were planning the Bar Kokhba for rebellion. Now, I'll tell you what's interesting about that. What's interesting about that is I could not find anybody from the time of Rabbi Akiva until the 20th century who actually said that. Which means it's very popular today, and lots of rabbis, and you've all heard it even. I don't have to, you know, tell you. The earliest that I saw, and this is not to say that no one said it before, because it's really hard to see such things. But as I said, I searched through as much as I could, Haggadot, and I could not find anybody there. And by the way, I did absolutely rely on a computer on this, and I just searched words. I searched Akiva, and I searched Bar Kokhba on Haggadah. I searched for Bar Kokhba in Haggadah commentaries, right? So maybe I can search better. Maybe I can find more. Maybe I think I looked both Bar Kokhba and Bar Koziba. He's barely called Bar Kokhba in Jewish sources. He's first called Bar Kokhba. Well, he's hinted at in the Yerushalmi, but he's first called Bar Kokhba in the Church Fathers already. He's called Bar Kokhba. But his real name was Bar Koziba. So as I said, I could have looked, but nonetheless, I didn't find anything obvious. Maybe it's there and it eluded me. But I do know in the 20th century, the earliest at least one that I found was, and there are those who, by the way, also claim that this is a commentary which emerges from the Warsaw Ghetto. And the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising is right after this. And that's what they were discussing, you know, the rebellion and you know, what they were therefore saying what was going on there. But the person who already explained it before this was Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon. So Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon, did you ever hear of him? You know who he was, Rabbi Maimon. Rabbi Maimon, his real name was Fishman, maybe. Actually, they borrowed Fishman from somebody else. But he's one of the signers of the Megillat Atzmaut. He said Shachianu immediately afterwards. Everyone said Amen to his Shachianu. Both he and in Israel. 1948. The year of Maimon was a minister in Ben Gurion's government. His sister was a member of the Knesset, but she was a Mapainik, you know, all the way on the other side of the political spectrum. The two of them, by the way, made Aliyah together. They traveled together. He had been an orphan at a very young age, and he was raised in the house of the rabbi who was the Malban. And later on, he gets smicha from the Aruch HaShulchan, and he gets smicha from Shlomo Cohen from Vilna, who was the Dayan of Vilna, and he was a Magid. He was somebody who was a Magid in a town in Europe, and he was a well-known rabbi, and then at some point he comes to Israel, and he's a Zionist there as well, and he was one of the absolute fathers of religious Zionism, and he was the kind of person that if Ben-Gurion did something he didn't like, he quit. Mm-hmm. So that's it. I'm going home. I can't. No. But they don't quit. He did, and Ben-Gurion then had to crawl back to him and to beg him to continue. He also tzmicha for this day chemid. Then he comes to Israel later on, becomes friendly with Rav Kook. He's the one who opened up Mosada Rav Kook. You just heard of him. Right away, right after I talk about him, I haven't heard of him. Yeah. Anyway, I found in his writings, and again, I don't want to mislead that I was the first, I found in his writings. That's the interesting thing. I found in other writings as well as other people, but everyone else was after him. There was also like other people at the same time or a little bit afterwards or in 1948 or so on. You find other people doing it, which means maybe we got more, I don't want to say militaristic, because some of you may think I'm saying it in a negative way. That became more Tower Minds of being in an army and fighting and rebelling and doing what we need to do. So I'm just saying is that it could be that for many, many years, this was not really on one's mind, but it was Rav Maimon then who then conjectures about what must have happened over there. And by the way, one of the people that I mentioned was the Aruch HaShulchan, who he was very friendly with. Aruch HaShulchan has a comment to the Haggadah, and he starts asking, what are these people doing over here? Now, the only reason I didn't bring down the quote from the Aruch HaShulchan is because there were earlier people who kind of asked the same question, but let me at least get it, lay things up a little bit more. In source number 6, the Gemara tells us, this is a Gemara in Sanhedrin talking about looking for a good, solid Beit Din. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. What does tzedek mean? You should do tzedek in a tzedek way. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. Tonu Rabban, tzedek, tirdof. Halecha chacham liyeshiva. Make sure that you go to the right place. Acha Rabbi Lezer lelud. So now you know that Rabbi Lezer, it's Rabbi Lezer Gadol, he lives in Lud. Rabbi Yochim and Zakai, Levurchayil. Acha Rabbi Yeshua, Lepkin. Acha Rabbi Gamliel, Liavne. Acha Rabbi Kiva, Lepnei Brak. So this is one of the sources, and there are others, by the way, the list continues. There are others here. This is one of the sources that tells us, oh, Rabbi Kiva, he lived in Bnei Brak. Now, I just have to say this, because we can't miss this. You know, you never know what people will find interesting, right? So where was Bnei? We have Lud. We're going to come back to Lud in a moment, where exactly Lud was. But where was Bnei Brak in those days? Now, Bnei Brak most likely is not where Bnei Brak is now. If you get to the point that the 4 hits the number 1, you have a garbage dump there. There was once a garbage dump, which was called Chiria, which is now it's the Ariel Sharon National Park on a garbage dump. You can do anything you want with that. And that is called, you ready for this? You need a drum roll. That's called Tzomet Misubin. Why is Tzomet Misubin called Tzomet Misubin? Because of the Haggadah. Because Rabbi Akiva, and that's Bnei Brak. The garbage dump is on top of, that's the tell. Wow, I wonder why they ever call that Tzomet Misubin. Why? Because, right? You're saying, and I'm just hoping somebody's here saying, huh, I never thought of that. I mean, but that's the reason. That's what they called the place that Bnei Brak was once, Tzomet Misubin, because that's where they had this incredibly famous Seder. So even though there may have been no footprint of that story in rabbinic literature, there is actually a footprint of that place in terms of... So let us continue now. So in source number 7, so the Maratz Chiyut, by the way, he also has a commentary in the back of the Gemara. On that Gemara in Sanhedrin, where it says that, oh, Rabbi Kiva was in Bnei Brak, and Rileza was in Lud, so source number 7, it says, Nir Be'enai, Nunbet, Nir Be'enai, Bnei Brak, Hu Bechel Kol Shodan. Now he starts discussing where it is. I mean, he did not have a live Bnei Brak at the time. He has to try to figure it out. He goes, V'lud haitama halach yom achad Yerushalayim. And Lud was closer to Jerusalem. We'll see where Mishnah Maaseh Sheni, we'll look there in a moment, because that mission is going to help us for a different reason. Uvachakol shel Binyamin. Va'ayin Rashi sham va'ata ech yitachen ha-sipur ba'agadat Pesach devilazor Rabbi Akiva shei mesubim b'nei Brak kol otor layla hainu lo Pesach hari makom l'shur b'lazor b'lud v'b'lazor ba'atzmo sfer lei mishabeach niyat ha'atzlanim she'enan yotzim mi'batein b'rego. Rabbi Lezer, aside from that he's supposed to be in Lud, he says, I appreciate people who are, quote-unquote, lazy, who don't leave their houses. People should be at home for the holidays. Don't leave the... People should be at home for the holidays. The Shembas of Asugya, Sifru, Shover Lazar, and so on. We don't need to read at the very end. The Kashim Kain, Eich Halach B'chagamatzol V'nei Brach V'tzarechin Gadol. He goes, I don't understand the story. He goes, what were all these rabbis doing? So, of course, he did not know the interpretation that they were all there discussing the rebellion. I don't remember, other than him just now telling me to look in the Mishnah Maaseh Sheni, I don't remember who else told me to look here. But let's look here for a moment. In Maaseh Sheni Perakeh, first of all, it tells us that Kerem Revi'i Haya Ola LiYerushalayim Alach Yom Achad LeKol Tzad. That in terms of bringing this particular mitzvah, Tulupa Aretz, bringing it to Yerushalayim, the amount that you would need to travel is one day's travel to Jerusalem in every direction. And then it tells us, say, about Lud here. Yeah, Lud min ha-ma'arav. And Lud is, right, Lud on the western side is a one-day travel to Jerusalem. So that's what he was referring to, is that Lud is much more inland and is closer to Jerusalem. Now, it continues, we're still in the Mishnah Maaseh Sheni. Mishnah Vav, Erev Yom Tov Arishon Shel Pesach, Shel Revi V'Shel Shvi, Haya Bir. There are certain times that you need to do Bir, make certain things, I don't want to get overly technical, make certain things ownerless, right? This has to do with the laws of Maaseh. There's also some things in the laws of Shviat about this, that what is the date that you need to make it ownerless, right? That you have to pay your taxes. What is it? It's April 15th. Where does that come from? It comes from Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach is the date that you have to make these things ownerless. And then it tells us a story. Maaseh Rabbi Gamliel Vazakenim. By the way, I hope that turn of phrase now is a little familiar to us. Shayu Ba'in Bisvina. They were traveling on what day? They were traveling on Erev Pesach, and that's the day you have to make it ownerless. And now you're going to see who else is on the boat. Abin Rabbi Gamliel, Isur Shaniyat Lamud, Natan LeYoshua. Now, this is one of the sources that you know Rabbi Yeshua is a Levi. He says the Maser, this type of Maser, is going to go, Maser is going to the Levi. Umakom Muskarlo, Isur Acher Shaniyat Lamud, Natan LeAkiva Ben Yosef, and that was Sheiskebo La'anihim, and that's for the poor. Either Rabbi Akiva was a Gabbai Tztaka and gave money out to the poor, the way that most understand, or maybe Rabbi Akiva was poor. And but he's being Zaki it for all other poor that may be. But this is fascinating. And by the way, continue. Asur Asher Atilamun Natun Lelezer Ben Azariah Makom Muskar. So who's on the boat with him? Who's on the boat with him? Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shua, Rabbi Lezer, Lelezer Ben Azariah. So this is all great, except for
why are they on a boat? I don't understand.
Why are they on a boat? They're traveling. They're coming back from Rome, most likely. They had some kind of meeting that they had to have with the leadership in Rome, and now they're coming back. You can't plan, you know, when you're arriving, when you're on a boat. Travel is not as simple as you think. But what's more interesting is the timing of this. Is the timing and the group. The timing and the group, essentially, if you trade off Rabbi Gamliel for Rabbi Tarfon, you have Rabbi Akiva's group, and I saw somebody claim that they get off the boat, and that's why they all go into Lud. Sorry, that's why they all went to Bnei Brak. They get off the boat, they all go to Bnei Brak, because they just, Erev Pesach, that's where they, you know, how far can... How, yeah,
that's why the children and the family...
That's why they're all there together. By the way, it doesn't... So what about Gamliel? So you have to say Gamliel was the Nasi, and he had a better donkey. I don't know what to say. As I said, I've seen people try to connect. You know, this will be our famous theory of conservation of boat travel and Pesach Seders coming together. But again, the timing is also really interesting, because this is Erev Pesach, and then they end up on Pesach. So is this the same year? What's the answer? I don't know. I don't know. But whenever you can build a conspiracy theory, I mean, why not? Why miss a theory? So therefore, you realize that this Mishnah in Maaseh Sheni, which unfortunately we never would have seen other than this, is actually interesting just in terms of what it may or may not give us in terms of the background of our story. Yeah, there is actually a whole literature of boat stories. One of the people who was completely intrigued by this is Professor Danny Sperber, who won the Israel Prize. He's written about the various boat stories. He's written about nautical terms in the Talmud and things like this. And if you want, we can ask him to come in, give us a guest talk, and explain all these things. But either way, what we see is Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chias is already questioning, right at the end of the source. He goes, I don't know.
Where'd you go? What?
In source number 7, I'm saying he was already questioning what were they all doing here. So one answer, what are they doing here? They just got off the boat. Just got off the boat. How far can you travel? They couldn't all go to the very, especially those who lived up north. You couldn't get up north, so they're all over here and spend Pesach together with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva again calls his wife and says, listen, I'm bringing some guests for,
right.
Put some more.
Come off the plane.
right? Put some more, water in the soup. That's it. So as I said, there, I don't remember the first time I saw somebody make that suggestion, but as much as you can have this whole conspiracy that they're planning the Bar Kokhba rebellion, and by the way, once you continue with that, then you can say, so why is Rabbi Gamliel not there? Because Rabbi Gamliel, he's part of the establishment, and therefore he's anti, and so on. And you can make anything up that you want to. I don't know the validity of any of this, including even that that's what they were possibly discussing. By the way, why not just say that what they were really discussing was what it says, and that's Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, and that they were talking, there were rabbis who were performing the ritual of the Passover Seder. I mean, you could say that. I mean, again, it's much more exciting to say other things and then to look for all kinds of other intrigue. But as I said, there are those who try to take this and stick it together with the boat story. And, you know, why not? They arrived Erev Pesach, they're still on the boat. It could be that before Shkia they get off the boat, and how far can they get? They end up in Bnei Brak. I mean, part of what Rav Tzvi Hirschkias did is he raised the problem in terms of one of the attendees, and that's Rabbi Lezer. Rabbi Lezer prefers to be at home. By the way, I can throw on top of everything else, wasn't he put in Cherem, which means what's he doing with everybody else anyway? I mean, I could ask other questions, so you have to say that was before and so on. And again, the other thing is Rabbi Tarfon shows up over here. And by the way, maybe Rabbi Tarfon was on the boat also, but he wasn't as interesting because he wasn't a Levi and he wasn't an Ani and he wasn't whatever. The other problem, there's multiple problems. One of the other problems is, I mean, aside from, as he points out, he focuses on Rabbi Lezer, who said, no, you should be home. So if you should be home, why are you here? What's our answer? You just got off the boat. Good. Was he on the boat? Okay, so let's then continue. The other problem would be, and this is much more famous and much more to the point and much more to the story and much more to the continuation of it, and that's Rabbi Lezer ben Azaria, which means why or how easy was it for Rabbi Lezer ben Azaria to be at Rabbi Akiva Seder? Now, before you say anything else, you know, we do appreciate that in our world today, if somebody has any minhagim slightly different from us, then we start going into like these major existential crises and, you know, what in the world's going to be? I'm not even going to go to things like kidney odor or so on and so forth. That if somebody may have some other, you know, you can go to your gebruchst or you can go to people have different customs, so that just sets us off completely. By the way, maybe Rabbi Lezer was very smart and says, stay home for the holidays. Don't get involved with other people. But Rabbi Lezer ben Azaria and Rabbi Akiva have a different problem. And that is really going to be seen in source number 9. And number 9 starts off in the Gemara, it's Brachot. In a certain sense, we're still there in the first mission in Brachot. And it goes down to, when do you say Shema at night? So let's start with an observation which is not going to be absolute. Midnight is not really a Jewish thing. Midnight is, who's midnight with the pumpkin and the Cinderella? Midnight's a Cinderella thing, right? It's much more prominent in Cinderella than it is in Halacha. Now, those of you who are clever and can work hard and can search and can find, maybe you'll find, actually we have a whole song about things that are midnight. Around midnight, it's also, is that Eric Clapton also? After midnight. So we had Eric Clapton over here. People know Eric Clapton better than the Mission in Maaseh Sheni. Okay, very good. embrace it. That midnight, all those things and that's in there, none of them are at midnight. They're all in the night, and we say, oh, look at midnight. This is Chatzot HaLayla, Vayibah Chatzot HaLayla, and then they're not necessarily happened by Chatzot HaLayla. We say it's Chatzot HaLayla, other than Makat B'Charot. Makat B'Charot is something which is apparently connected to Chatzot HaLayla, but I'm going to say it again. It's not that nothing exists. It's just nowhere nearly as prominent as you may think it is. And that's really the backdrop to understand this. Kriyat Shema Arvit v'Halel B'Leili P'sachim v'Achilat Pesach Mitzvatan Ad She'ale Amud HaShachar. Now, what did this really just now say? What it really said is that midnight's not a thing, for real. And the various things that you may think that we can only do until midnight, midnight's there as a way of keeping you away from breaking the halacha. Don't do it the last minute. Like we always do things like, don't do it the last minute. So therefore, Kriyat Shema, at night, you can really say it to the morning. Hallel on Pesach, you can really say till the morning. Eating the Korban Pesach, which may be connected to the Hallel, you could do it till the morning. All of these things are till Amud HaShachar, as long as it's night, these are laws of the night, and you could do it from the beginning of the night to the end of the night. So get straight off, the Gemara says, Amar of Yosef, Lokasha, Harb Lizman, Azariah, Harb Yakiva. No, there's an argument about this, and there's two different opinions, Harb Lizman, Azariah, Harb Yakiva. Now keep in mind where we started, and they're sitting at the same Seder. That's part of what's interesting. Titania of Achel de Basa Belay Lazeh, it says you should eat the meat on that night. Rabbi Elizabeth Azaya, Omer Nemakan Belay Lazeh, Nemar Lahala and Vavarti Beret Tzrayim Belay Lazeh. It says Belay Lazeh when you should eat the Korban Pesach. It says that God is going to strike them Belay Lazeh. When does God strike them? Malahala and Ad Chatzot, Avchan Ad Chatzot. That just like the striking of the firstborn, which was called Belay Lazeh, was at midnight, so too, eating the Korban Pesach is till Chatzot. And by the way, that would make it somewhat unique among the korbanot. I said, I'm not saying absolutely, but somewhat unique. But it said also said the word chipazon when we rushed. Ad shad chipazon. Maybe it should even be allowed the next day. That all night you can eat it, but not the next day. You can eat it until the sun comes up, the time that we left Egypt. Rabbi Lezer Omer be'erev atazoreach u'kevo shemesh ata'ochel u'moed sitcha mimitzrayim atasoreif. That you burn, this is Rabbi Lezer, by the way, you burn in the morning. So be'erev atazoreach u'kevo shemesh ata'ochel. That means at sunset you would eat it u'moed sitcha mimitzrayim atasoreif. Then anything left over would be burnt. Rabbi Yeshua Omer be'erev atazoreach u'kevo shemesh ata'ochel ba'ad matay ata'ochel ba'olech. Ad moed zit chamim mitzrayim. I mean, Rabbi, hakol modim. Everyone agrees. Kishe nigalu yisro mitzrayim lo nigalu lo be'erev. The Jews were redeemed at night, as it says. Shenemar hotziach Hashem l'kem mitzrayim laila. Ukishe yotzu. But when did they leave? So now we just now made a distinction between geula and between yitziat mitzrayim. Lo yotzu ele b'yom. Shenemar mimachrata pesach. The next day after the korban pesach. Or the holiday of Pesach, Yotzu B'nei Yisrael B'yad Ramah. By the way, that's really interesting because now we realize there's two different holidays. Why? Because there's two different events. We don't know when Pesach is over. Is it over at midnight? Is it over in the morning? Elizabeth Ben Azariah, it's at midnight. And or Bekiva would, and then, right? There is overlap, obviously, because when the sun sets. See, I'll tell you what part of the issue is, just in case we're not being clear. We all know that Jewish holidays begin at Shkia, they begin at nightfall and they end at nightfall. But the Beit HaMikdash, it's the other way around. The night follows the day. So the Korban is, in Judaism, we always say that first is the night and then the day, but then the Beit HaMikdash, it's first the day and then the night. So what we have over here is two separate things. We have the Korban Pesach, which is a ritual, which is a Korban, and therefore the first the day, it's brought during the day and then it's eaten at night. On the other hand, the holiday of Chag HaMatzot is like all the other holidays. It starts at night, and then it continues out the other way around. So then when is going to be the overlap? The overlap between the Pesach and Chag HaMatzot is going to be that night, which is both the night, the time to eat the Korban Pesach, and already the time of Chag HaMatzot. And then you have, again, this really interesting overlap between the two. But we also have two different holidays. And by the way, just to make everything more complicated, we also have leaving in the morning, but we also have the seventh day. The seventh day is also part of the seven-day holiday Chag HaMatzot, and there's also something significant that happens over there, so hopefully we have everything lined up. But now we realize that this discussion about Shema, until when you say Shema at night, and can you say it past Chatzot, or it can be said until the dawn, so what we learn is that we really can say dawn, but Elizabeth Azariah say no, that there is midnight's a thing, and therefore the Korban Pesach is only in towards midnight. So therefore, as far as we're concerned, this then will take us to another problem, and that is, how does Rabbi Akiva and Rav Elazar ben Azariah, how are they having the Seder together? Because it's not clear, there's actually two other things which are probably interrelated to this, is that some of us will be under pressure, and you have to look, when's Chatzot, you have to eat the Afikom before Chatzot. Some of us are actually a little bit more knowledgeable, will know, yeah, we do that as a chumrah or as maybe more than a chumrah, but the challah goes together. The challah is not separated, and the challah gets, well, actually the challah is broken up. We have a challah which is said before the meal and a challah after the meal. But so, by the way, before we eat the Korban Pesach and after we eat the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach should have been done together with a Hallel, which means if I have to eat the Afikoman in place of the Korban Pesach before Chatzot, I probably have to say Hallel before Chatzot as well, and I probably have to finish everything before Chatzot, which is obviously, or clearly for a lot of us, going to be a challenge. If you want, I could tell the famous story about Rabbi Lichtenstein, who's there was lots of talking during the Seder, and by the time they finished eating the matzah before they started the meal, he looks, he goes, oh, we have to have the Afikoman now, and miss the whole meal. To which his wife, Tova, right, Tova Soloveitchik, right, said to him, Aaron, I was also raised in an Orthodox home, and we can eat, we can have our meal, right? So, as I said, that's the my brother may have been there for that Seder. I have to ask him, but yes, why? Because ultimately we hold like Rabbi Akiva, but nonetheless, according to Elizabeth and Azaria, you should have finished the Afikoman, not the Korban Pesach at that point, but there's also, and you should have said already the Hallel, and there's also, and have the four cups of wine, and essentially you should have finished the Seder. The mitzvah of Sipur Yisrael, Kol Halayla, is only if you follow the opinion that that whole night is part of Pesach, because Pesach is connected to the Halachot, or the Halachot are connected to the story, and all these things are interrelated. But if you're telling it ends at midnight, then everything ends at midnight. And by the way, that's now more interesting, because Rebbe Lezer sitting with Rebbe Kiva. Now, by the way, you could right now say, Rebbe Lezer is a good guest. Rebbe Kiva, Rebbe Lezer ben Azaria, he's a good guest. Rebbe Kiva is the Maradat. Rebbe Kiva is the rabbi of Bnei Brak. And even though people also overstate this. He was the Nasi. He wasn't necessarily the Nasi that day. That could be before he was the Nasi. He was after he was the Nasi. 1 in 4 weeks he was the Nasi. Those of you who know what I'm talking about, which, by the way, is all the same characters. It's Rabbi Gamliel gets disposed, or Lesbana, maybe Rabbi Akiva we should put there. No, Rabbi Yeshua is the one who gets insulted. And that's. I'm saying it's all the same people involved. And maybe Lesbana was. Maybe he wasn't the Nasi at that point. Nonetheless, that he would say, okay, let me respect Rabbi Kiva. And by the way, I got to go a step further. And let's say we talk about leaving Egypt after Chatzot. It's Bittul Torah. Okay. So I'm just saying is that the fact that Elizabeth and Azariah is there is not necessarily going to be as strong as of a question as some people try to make it. Okay, this is not his custom. So hopefully, you know what? Maybe he snuck off on the side, ate his afikoman before Chatzot, and then was a very good guest afterwards. I know it's not Jewish tradition to be a good guest, but maybe he was a very good guest. He was wise beyond his years, if you will. By the way, the Yerushalmi says that his hair turns white. His name is beard. The Yerushalmi says his hair turns white, as opposed to that his beard turns white. And also says, I believe that he was 16, not that he was 18, and whatever. Let us continue. So all of this we took out of source number 9. Source number 10 takes us to the end of Masechet Pesachim again. Behold, Dovid Archaiv and Lerodot Atzmo Ke'ilu Hu Yatzami Mitzrayim Shenemar V'Yigadot L'Vincha B'Yomahu Le'mo B'Vor Zeh Asashin L'Tev Mitzrayim L'Fichach. If you have to see yourself, L'Fichach Anachnu Chayavim L'Odot L'Lelu Shebeich L'Fair L'Romein L'Ader L'Levreich L'Leu L'Kales L'Misha Salavotenu Vilanu at Kolanisim Elo. If we just have to see ourselves as if we left, by the way, the Rambam adds, we have to see ourselves as if we were slaves and as if we left. It's not just the leaving, also the servitude. We should see ourselves, which I don't know if this is clear in the Gemara. Ad Heichan Hu Omer, until when, meaning how far do you have to say in the Hallel? So, Beit Shammai Omer Ad Ema Bin Smecho, Beit Hillel Omer Ad Chal Mishlamayn Imayim. I reserve the right to return to this at some later date to explain what their argument is. V'chotem Begu'ula. And then you seal this by saying the bracha of the Geula. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, now we've moved over to one of our other members of this meal, Asher Ga'alnu V'Ga'alat Avoteinu B'Mitzrayim, who has redeemed us and redeemed our forefathers, which, by the way, sounds, to a certain extent, perfect. That's what it said, that we have to see ourselves if we left, so therefore God redeemed us. We have to sing, and we say the bracha that God redeemed us, because we just experienced redemption. And we say that God redeemed our forefathers, so everything is perfect. Right? Rabbi Tarfon makes perfect sense. V'lo hayachotem, v'Rabbi Akiva omer, ki Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoteinu yagi'enu l'moadim v'l'regalim acherim abaim l'regalim shalom smechim b'vinyan irecha v'sasim b'avodotecha v'nachal sham min hazvachim u'min hapsachim ad, right, v'sathim baruch atah Hashem ga'al Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva is not just talking about the present, Rabbi Akiva is talking about the future. And that becomes very interesting, because now I can actually begin to wonder something. That Rabbi Akiva, when he talks about celebrating leaving Egypt, he's talking about not just that moment that the firstborn was struck. He's already moving towards the future, towards the morning, and so on. And over here as well, where Rabbi Tarfon, on the one hand, you could say, wow, look how much he's extending himself by saying, it's not, we see ourselves if we left, and it's not just the past, it's the present as well. And Rabbi Akiva, no, it's not just the present, it's also the future. And this may be the key to at least understanding part of what's going on over here. The famous story, and I'm not going to go through the whole thing, which is the Gemara at the end of Makot, source number 11. It's the Gemara in Makot. This is the famous story where, of course, it's Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar ben Azari and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva, right? All of the people also involved in that other story, they go up and they see the destroyed Jerusalem. And I'm not going to, again, we all know the story. And we get to the end of the story. Rabbi Akiva is saying, well, till that prophecy came true, I didn't know this prophecy. So, but what actually is he saying? And what is the prophecy? The prophecy is that Jerusalem will be in ruins and Jerusalem will be rebuilt. So I want to skip to the very end, which is right on page 3, right, the end of source 11, when it says, Ad shilon tkayim nevotosha ori yayiti mityareh shilot tkayim nevor shil Zechariah. What's Zechariah's prophecy? Od yeshvu zekenimu zekenot b'rechov Yishlaim. Right next time, you know, you see elderly people walking on the streets in Jerusalem, that is the, right? We can do this in this classroom even. Sorry. This is a fulfillment of a prophecy.
That's us.
And children playing, that's us, right? Children playing in the streets. So Rabbi Akiva says, right, Achshav shenatchai minuvotel sh'uriya biyadua shenuvotel shel Zechariah mitkayemet. Now it's interesting, because Rabbi Akiva here doesn't talk about the future, but he talks about the redemption from the future taking place in the present. And b'lashon hazeh amru Akiva nechamtanu, Akiva nechamtanu. By the way, the Aruch HaShulchan, in his commentary to the Agada, he says, why were they all with Rabbi Akiva? Because Rabbi Akiva is an optimist. It's good to be with people with good energy. Everyone else, oh, the situation is so bad, and what's going to be, and so on and so forth. And Rabbi Akiva's there, you know, he says, okay, I see the future redemption. But it doesn't see it as the future. I mean, that's the whole point. I mean, that's the whole point. When you go back and really think about the argument of Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and you really think about the argument of Akiva and Rabbeinu Tarfon over here, they're standing in the present. And they're standing in the present. Rabbi Akiva is off in the future, but he thinks the future is the present. And that's really the gift. That's really the gift of optimism, is being able to, and that's feeling the future redemption. And that really, in a sense, is remarkable. But I want to fill this in and say a couple more things. By the way, just notice, you know, you said before when we started that you never heard of this Rabbi Maimon. So I told you that he learned with the Aruch HaShulchan, he got smicha from the Aruch HaShulchan, and the Malbim adopted him. So let's look at the Malbim. This is just aesthetics. He writes on the pasuk in Devarim, Vasita Pesach LaHashem Lekecha, Umasha Gazotziach HaLaila. That was the whole thing quoted in the Gemara, that we were taken at night, but we really weren't taken at night. We left in the morning. So what is Geula? What is Yetziah? And so on. So he says, Ratzalomer Sha'az Nitanlim Rishut Miparo Lelechet. There was a moment the Paro says you can leave. That itself is redemptive. V'heim lo holchu ad hayom. They didn't leave until the morning. V'chein omer bebrachot melamed shah. Hatchila lahem geula mibe'erev. The beginning of the redemption is at night. Va'pesach ha'yizachor al hatchalat ha'geula. And the Pesach is there to commemorate the start of the geula. Va'alza'am ha'otziecha layla. Va'hamatza ha'yizachor al hemshech yimei ha'geula. And the matzah is about the rest of the redemption. Shelo nishama ad shvi shel Pesach shetavu ha'mitzrim b'yan l'chein Matzah Shiva. So the 7-day holiday is till the completion. It is they're all about redemption. So when is the redemption? But he actually uses an interesting term over here, and the term is the beginning of the redemption. The Hebrew that he uses is the Hatchala Hageula. We'll come to the Aramaic for that in a moment. But first, let me just point something out that you already know. But then you're going to see something which the Gemara does with it, and then it will fit into something else that you already know. But you won't realize that's what the Gemara was doing. Okay, source 13. 13 is simply, I took the first 8 of the Shemona Esrei Brachot, which are really 19, and I just put numbers by them. Number 1, Magen Avraham, 2, Machay Metim, 3, Kela Kadosh, 4, Chonen Dat, 5, Rotzeh B'Shvah, 6, Choninim Abar L'Sloach, 7, Goel Yisrael, which is that what we have to focus on. Gemara, 14. Gemara Giladaf Yitzayin, Amar Rava, Mitoch Sh'atidin Liga El B'Shvit, he says that there's a tradition that the Jews are going to be redeemed b'shviit, in the 7th year. L'fichach kavua b'shviit. Therefore, the bracha, Goel Yisrael, was put at the 7th bracha. So again, you did not realize that those two traditions come together, that when you had 18 or 19 brachot to put it in, how do you know which sequence you put them in? So there is a tradition that the 7th sabbatical year in the cycle, that's when redemption takes place. That's why it's the 7th bracha. L'fichach kavu b'shviit. V'ha'omar mar. But there's another opinion. B'shishit kolot. In the 6th year, there's going to be noise. Again, that requires interpretation. B'shviit milchamot. But in the 7th, there will be wars. B'motzoi shviit ben David ba. And then Mashiach will come. So the Gemara answers, and this is the only time in all of Shas that this phrase is used. Milchama nami itchaltu de geulahu. Milchama nami itchaltu de geulahu. That war is also the beginning of the redemption. Which means the only time that it talks in the Gemara about this concept called itchaltu de geulah is here. And what is the context of saying that war is the beginning of the redemption? What's the context? It's the Goel Yisrael. Where do you talk about redemption? Now, if you look at Rashi, in 15, Rashi's on the words, one second, Shavua, in the 7-year cycle, Sheben David Ba, Chaluk Mishar Shanim, Kedemar Bechelek, Shana Rishona, Rav, Right Ad Vishim Melchamot, V'matzai Shvi Ben David Ba, Itchalta De Geula, Hi V'af Agav Dehai Geula Lav, Geula De Galuti. It's not the complete Geula from exile. Elishi Galenu Minat Sarota Ba'otelenu Tamid. There are stages to Geula. Daha, and now what he's really doing is he's telling you, look at some of the other brachot in the Amidah, right? You have brachot kibbutz, right? Nekabetz Chay Yisrael, Ubinyan Yushalayim, Vitzemech David, which means we have a lot of things we need to do. We have to gather the exiles, and we have to build Jerusalem, and then we have to have the Tzemach David, the remnant from the family of David, Mashiach come. Yesh l'kol achad v'achad bracha la'atzma levad migulazu. V'ilohachi kevun de shem gula lev kavua b'shviyit. And therefore, that's how they picked number 7, because of this rabbinic tradition. So I'm going to say this is really interesting because we see there are stages. Now, this point that maybe you noticed, and I deliberately brought this, was that war is the beginning of redemption, is because war is an upheaval. And upheaval, things which were kind of moving slowly, suddenly get turned over, picked up, thrown in the ground, and shattered, and then you start completely anew. That it's an upheaval. And that's really what this Gemara says. Now, the Gra in Source 16 says, Amoti chem eretz Yisrael, b'vticha mi beit avadim, going back to our tension about, is Elizabeth a Zion or Yekiva? Is it at night or is it in the morning? Sheshnei gu'ulot hi b'yitziyat Mitzrayim. Echad b'layla, v'hu itchalta de gu'ula. See, meaning the Malbim already did this. Right? Even though the Malbim's after. He's after the Gra. But this idea to attach the phrase "etchalta de geula" by the night or "hatchalat ha-geula" is that yeah, that's the beginning. But there are stages to redemption. Sha'am Moshe l'power b'layla imtir to l'ftor b'yad min amakot omar lehem b'nei chormata ulamachrat be'etzem ayom yatzum Yisrael mitzrayim b'yad rama pidyan she Yisrael mimakat b'charot. It's really interesting because part of what I was pointing at along the way halacha also the idea of pidyon haben. Pidyon HaBen with the firstborn is because the Makat Becharot, that commemorates about what happened at midnight. And that's Pidyon, which is really what he's focusing on. There's Pidyon Mitzrayim, and then there's Yitziat Mitzrayim. Pidyon Mitzrayim is when we're redeemed. We're redeemed, and that's why Mitzvah of Redemption follows it. On the other hand, Yitziah is what takes place the next day. By the way, once it takes place the next day, when do we celebrate the next day? We start to celebrate the next day the night before, which means when is Pesach? Sorry, I have to change that. When is Chag HaMatzot? Chag HaMatzot is a 7-day holiday. When does it start? Like all of our holidays, which already starts in the evening because of an event that happened during the day because of the way we celebrate holidays. Beit HaMikdash holidays. So therefore, we get to this wonderful time that the Pesach starts when you can bring the Korban Pesach, and then you can eat the Korban Pesach, like all other kachim at night. You can eat the kachim at night, and then till when you can eat it? Well, the reality is until the morning, but Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, no, till midnight, because midnight is when all the drama takes place. But as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, is that Rabbi Akiva is already looking and seeing and feeling into the future, and therefore Rabbi Akiva doesn't freeze frame it on that particular moment. And as I said, we see something therefore interesting with Rabbi Akiva. I'm going to end we have time, we have nothing else to go, we're good. So let's continue then a little more. The Tosefta is interesting because it talks about when you say Shema at night, and now this will fit in as well. Korei Shema Tzarech Lazkiris Yit Mitzrayim. Rabbi Amit Miyatsev, at night you have to, sorry, during the day, not at night. Tosefta's talking about saying Shema during the day, and it says that you should mention Yit Mitzrayim. And Acherim Orim at the end of the line, Tzarech Lazkir Ba Makapi Charot for Kriyat Yamsuf, that we need to mention both of these things. The Chasdei David, who is a commentary on the Tosefta, you see, he lived 1718 to 1790. He writes, again, the same concept that they're saying is that leaving Egypt is one of stages of redemption. I'm saying that's what we say it every day in the Shemona Esrei, three times a day, but we never pay attention to it, right? I don't know how many ask or hold it. What is Gaal Yisrael doing all the way over there, and we don't find the other parts of Gula? No, there are stages to Gula. There are stages that take place, and the Jews already were redeemed the night before, and then it continues. The Gra, because there are stages, it's because there are stages, and part of it, you're right, part of all this is going to be a question of language. What do we mean by redemption? What do we mean by Gula? That's actually going to be a part of the problem, and good. I'm glad you asked this, and maybe we can now say this a little differently. Maybe Rav Elazar ben Azariah, who's saying, "No, it's only till midnight," is looking at the hand of God punishing the Egyptians, or he's looking at it until we can finish eating the Korban Pesach. That would be really interesting. When do you eat the Korban Pesach? Until midnight, which means he's focusing on a religious development. And Rabbi Akiva is talking about actually leaving Egypt right in the morning, and maybe Rabbi Elazar is saying, no, that's not religious, that's national. Maybe that's political, it's national. By the way, it's the hand of God in both cases. It's the hand of, but are we focusing, when we talk about, one second, are we focusing on the religious aspect that we brought the Korban Pesach, or are we focusing on that we leave Egypt? So which is the redemption? Is it something which is more religious, something which is more national? And I can see somebody say, no, we're religious Jews and we look at the Korban Pesach and that's what we're focusing on. And Rabbi Akiva, and that's not all that surprising then, is going to say, no, it's until we actually leave. You know, the religion is great, but there's another part of all of this. But give me a couple seconds. There's a little bit more here. So one is, it's interesting, in source 17 and 18, we talk about the Makat Becharot. We talk about the Makat Becharot should be part of what we say when we say the Shema. It's interesting that the Chasdei David sees this as far as he's calling it the Chaltut Geula. Right, and then the completion of the Geula is Kriyat Yamsuf. And that, again, is interesting because now we have the whole seven-day holiday, you know, that we're able to see. This also may be connected in a completely different way to the Vilna Gaon's comment that has to do with Purim. The difficult Gemara about Purim says, "Mechayv inish levsumi adelo yada bein Arham and Levarach Mordechai." And what does it mean? You have to drink so much. You don't know the difference. Arham and Baruch Mordechai. How do you drink so much? People have tried. It's a little hard to get to that amount of drinking. So the Vilna Gaon says, what does that mean? So that's in source 19. This is commentary to the Shulchan Aruch. Chayev, Mechayev Inishab Sumev, Ratzalomar, Bein Nekamat Haman, the Gdulat Mordechai. That you drink and you analyze a philosophical question. What is the main part of this, of being saved on Purim? Is it that the wicked finally pay their due and are punished? Or is it that the righteous are going to be rewarded? Which means we have two sides of the same philosophical problem. And that is tzaddik v'ra lo v'rusher v'tovlo. So when it comes to Purim, he sees this as you drink and contemplate. Which is the greatness of Purim? That Haman got his due or that Mordechai got rewarded? And that's really interesting because now I can take that back and say, is it Makat Becharot that the Egyptians now suffer, or is that we leave? Which is the main thing that we're celebrating on Purim, on Pesach? Is it the Makat Becharot? Is it that midnight? Is it that they're being punished? Or is it that we are leaving and that we are being rewarded? So again, I'm reading this Vilna Gaon's question, and I'm hearing something else with it. Last thing I want to discuss today. You see, I have a whole page on it, but we'll touch it a little bit. In source number 20 is the famous four lashonot of Geula: Vehotzeiti, Vehitzalti, Vegaalti, Velakachti. In source 21, the Gemara says, "Turn Arbon and Revi'i with that fourth cup, Gomer Aleva Tahalel," which means the four cups divide the Seder into different parts. So one of the parts of the Seder is the Halel, and it says here that's the fourth cup, right? The Halel Gadol, Va'omer Halel Hagadol, Divrei B'Tarfon, and then forget whatever comes afterwards. Rashi in 22 writes, "Hachi Gersinan, Revi Gomer Tahalel." No, the right text is Revi, but by the way, that's our text. But Rashi's telling us this is the right text, so what do you now know that there's another text? If you look at the riff in source 23, Tonor Abanon, Chamishi, Omer Lava Tahalel. Halal Gadol. He says into the fifth cup. Right. So this is the start of something which is really, really interesting. That there, in source 24, the Ran is going to tell us, based upon the Baal Ma'ar, that actually Rabbi Tarfon argued with the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah said that even a poor person, you give them four cups of wine. Rabbi Tarfon said, no, you give them five cups of wine. Which means as much as we like everything to line up in fours, Rabbi Tarfon says, no, there's five. But this is what Rashi is saying. No, the right text is that there's four. And now we see that the Rif is saying, by the way, it may really come down to the difference between Ashkenaz and Sfard. It may come down to Surah and Pumbedita. It may come down to, again, just two different schools of thought. And then we're going to end up with some people saying four, some people saying five, and some people having a nice compromise. So, for example, in the Rambam in 25 will have the compromise. No, you pour the fifth one, but you don't drink it, and that's the Kosher Shel Eliyahu, and that's what the Rambam says in source 25. The Yesh Lo Limzog Kos Chamishi, the Loma or Love Halal Hagadol. So you realize that that's really close to what Rabbi Tarfon said. The Kosa Eino Chova Kamo Arba Kosot. Which is not the same kind of thing. The Ravid, on the other hand, that's in source 26, the Ravid, which is not on the Ravid on the Rambam, it's the same Ravid, there were three different Ravids, the same Ravid, but he writes this in different places. And here he says, Keneged Heveti, because in that source, number 20, the four Lashonot was the fifth one, Veheveti. And Veheveti means to come to the land. So it's interesting now that Rabbi Tarfon, who had talked about the present tense, the geula in the present tense in the past, now we find that Rabbi Tarfon has a fifth cup. So now the question is, where does that fifth cup come from? Now the Ravid, by the way, himself in source 27 has a long explanation for where it's from. I'm not going to look that. I'm going to prefer to look at the Torah Tumima in source 28. Torah Tumima is the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, who we had cited earlier, and he writes, Uma shelo tiknukos, why don't we have a fifth cup? Whether he knew about the, I don't know what to say, what he knew, what he didn't know. You can't say that entering Israel is not part of the Geula. Velakachti is really about Matan Torah. That's what it sounds like. So it's not all about leaving Egypt. Because now we are in exile. Va'aretz misura b'dei zarim, and the land of Israel is controlled by strangers. E efsha lisa kos yayin al zeh. How can we possibly have a fifth cup and celebrate ve'veti? V'ulai l'zeichu zeh tiknu kos miyuchad l'shmo sheliyo. Maybe that's why of a kos sheliyo. Zikun v'remez sha'anu mikavim l'biyato, that we're hoping that Eliyahu will come. And one day that the land will be populated and the people of Israel will come back to life. What an unbelievable statement over here. So let me say two things and I'm finished. One is some say that's why it's called Kosher Eliyahu, because there's Machloket. Is there four or five Eliyahu's going to come and tell us which one is right? So that's what some people theorize. That's why it's Kosher Eliyahu. On the other hand, what he's saying over here is that the fifth cup, and he's not talking about, again, there was an argument. Maybe, we can say it like this, that all these rabbis had a Seder together with Rabbi Akiva. And they're nice and they're polite. Why? Because they're nice rabbis and they're polite and they respect one another and they have different customs and some eat kitniot and some eat kibrukst and some don't. Although, hard to believe that no one ate kibrukst then. But anyway, everybody is very well behaved. And Rabbi Akiva is an optimist. And Rabbi Akiva is sitting there, maybe in his kittel, maybe not, with his face shining and talking about the future redemption as if it's right now in the present. And maybe even though Rabbi Tarfon starts the Seder only thinking that you talk about the present tense, and that itself is an avoda, to see yourself as if you're freed, but Rabbi Akiva speaks about the future as if it's the present, so maybe he convinces Rabbi Tarfon that we need to have a fifth cup, because maybe we really can't celebrate the future. But for us who live in Israel, and the land has come back to life, and all these negative things that he said, why we don't have the fifth cup, Maybe it is worthwhile for us not just to pour a fifth cup, but also to drink it as well, and to celebrate, and you can have grape juice for the fifth cup also, and to celebrate all the things that the Torah Tumim says that we're missing. And all the things that it sounds now, again, those two traditions, some couldn't even believe there would be Tarifun can possibly go there. There's a fifth cup about Veheveti and sitting in exile. How can you talk about Heveti? But maybe when we're no longer sitting in exile, maybe we can absolutely celebrate Heveti. We've seen that redemption goes in. We've seen, first of all, Pesach is celebrated in different ways. And we see that there are stages to redemption. And we see that war is an upheaval and war is a part of redemption. And every single day we talk about Goel Yisrael in the seventh bracha because of that upheaval, because that's the beginning of the process. And we know the other stages. And we don't necessarily always know what's going to be the proper sequence. But we do realize that a lot of those brachot that we've been saying for generations, a lot of those blessings have come to fruition. And now we realize that we're in the midst of our upheaval, and we hope that very quickly and very peacefully and without having to pay any more korbanot, that we get to this final stage, and that God will allow all of us to celebrate this completion of this redemption that we started to celebrate all those years ago.